nice glass of iced tea. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That'll do it. All right. Andy, have you ever stopped to ask yourself, what are the sounds you find most tingling? And I don't mean just the scary sounds, although that too, but I'm talking about the ones that set your teeth on edge and raise goose flesh, make you cringe. For some, it's fingernails down a chalkboard. For others, the scream of the panther in the night. For others, it might even be a bite from a crisp apple. That's a good one, too. I can tell you this, though. If you happen to be a mouse, that high on your list of disconcerting sounds was chowed down by a monster outside your hole, the snapping of his brittle bones, no thicker than toothpicks, and the crunch of mouse cartilage, enough to make you sick, sounding like this. Yeah, sounds awful, doesn't it?
I want to try it.
Yeah, all right. 1, 2, 3. Uh-huh. But, okay. We want to keep some of those for later. We've got to have something to pick our teeth with after dinner, don't we? All right. Yes, for a mouse to be munched is no fun at all, which is why the two remaining cousins and Uncle Bobo, after several seconds of stunned catatonia, shook themselves out of it, elected to flee top speed, and aiming to get anywhere beyond the long arm of the claw's reach. Andy ran too, but in a separate direction, not burrowing further into the lair, but running along the back of the baseboard there, which took him to a second gap where he could peer out and glimpse the monster beast. This was what his grandfather had always insisted he'd do. Learn by observation, Andy, and take advantage of every opportunity you have to do that. Thus, Andy received his first cat-achism. That is, his first view of the acts of a predatory cat. To Andy, the cat seemed a colossal creature. Seen in profile, big as a sphinx, 9 to 11 times Andy's own length, and stacked fully as tall as 5 upright Andes would be, standing on each other's shoulders like a totem pole. The monster, chewing, is concentrating on the taste. So with vacant stare and absent gaze, it absent-mindedly swings its face towards Andy. And it isn't a face Andy is at all prepared to embrace. I mean, picture it yourself. Start with your basic visage of, say, a scruffy Maine coon cat. Fold in a pirate's bloodline. Add a dash of Puss in Boots. Heavy on the boot. Not the kind of face anyone would be prepared to call cute. Unless perhaps you were its mother. Provided also you were blind. Its outer covering was a shaggy mop of felted fur, frosted dreadlocks, and right in the center of his unwelcome matte face was a lump of coal nose, and above that, 4 heavy-set eyelids nesting 2 cat's-eye marbles of emerald green and radiating about as much warmth and empathy as the glass eyes you see in the taxidermist shop. Another feature of this fearsome creature, its forepaws, big as a bobcat's, functioning now like Velcro mittens, perfect for holding Deaky's limp body in place while Deaky's head gets bitten. Now the cat has finished his sup. He stretches, but doesn't get up. Instead, he lounges to his side, then onto his back, and looking up, begins to bat at an imaginary ball of yarn in the air. Bat, bat, bat. This helps to settle his meal. After a while, he tires of this and, tipping back up on his side, gazes off with unfocused eyes at nothing in particular. inward attention still focused on his meal. Licking and preening, but judging by the results, he doesn't know the meaning. All of a sudden, without moving a muscle or flexing a tendon, the cat's lazy eyes abruptly regain their perspicuity. His fine hunting senses reattune. Something is happening, he deduces, down by the end of the pews. Sighting down the baseboard along the floor, he sees that the front bumper section of a mouse has hove into sight, showing itself remarkably to be white. He could see not only the white, but its whiskers, its pink nose. Nonchalantly, the cat rose, getting to his feet. Its jaded and bored expression, a feline charade, concealing its ruthless cunning. It yawns. It stretches. And, as if adopting another yoga pose, tugs at the carpet with its toes, thereby activating the switchblades for hunting. Cautiously, Andy continues to observe. Now he watches it roll its neck, then turns half a turn as if it is going away, then stretching and yawning once again, it pretends to be sauntering off. However, that's no saunter. That's a slink. And just then, what do you think? Fast as a twinkling star can twink, about he comes again, and in a springboard fashion launches himself like a Roman candle in Andy's direction, making a beeline to pounce upon the powder puff creature with its nose poking out. But the powder puff does his own turnabout, and quickly deducing that disaster's ensuing, if he doesn't get moving, off he takes. Off, and in less than half a blink, is gone too. Powder poof! Now, my iced tea seems to need some more ice. Andy, would you please get me some more from the freezer? Just a couple of cubes will do. Oh, thank you. I dislike tepid tea. It can be hot or it can be cold, but it can't be tepid. Here we go. Now, when Grandfather Mouse climbs out of bed the next day, he feels the stiffness in his joints, and it's hard to tell whether the creaking sounds he's hearing are coming from him or the matchbox he sleeps in. Time was out of joint, and his joints were pretty much out of time. Once they were as supple as Andy's, if not more so. His albino grandson was growing up scrawny for his age, owing to his lack of steady and reliable nourishment to feed his growing body. That was the main reason Andy's parents had gone away seeking greener pastures, appointing him their son's guardian until their return. Passing by the alcove, Grandfather Mouse paused to look in on his charge, asleep on his mattress of worried Kleenex. And beside his bed, a small pile of paper shreds. Where had this strange habit come from? This propensity to shred paper and pile it. All mice had it to some degree, but Andy's bordered on neuroses. No doubt, partly it was from the stress of being forced to grow up parentless. Or perhaps he inherited it from his mother, who had her own somewhat high-strung nervousness, which she put to good use, using the broken needle of a sewing machine she had salvaged. Not to sew with, but to felt. Before his parents had set off on their quest, Andy's mother had used her nails to brush and curry comb her husband's pelt and grandfather's pelt, and even her own, so to gather enough hairs and fur to felt them into material and so fashion for Andy a camouflage cape, a cloak that Andy could don in the event of an emergency, like a survival suit, should grandfather and he be forced to flee. It was very crude for a tailored suit, but at least it provided some degree of maskability to conceal his stark and gaudy whiteness. Until such time as such an emergency arose, Andy was using it as his bedspread. The silver lining to yesterday's fiasco was the fact that Monsieur Bobo and the two little hobos had thankfully cleared out, packing and cramming their cheeks with crumbs like stuffing clothes into portmanteaus. They left, full-mouthed and haughty. Uncle Bobo, confining himself to a simple adieu, broken in two, became a frosty goodbye.
Goodbye!
That seemed to imply, like mud in the eye, a whole host of negative criticisms. Somehow this was all Grandfather and Andy's fault. Their failure as hosts for allowing this mortal danger to invade the roost. Well, if that was the way it was going to be, then they would punish their hosts by taking their leave and cutting short their stay. Grandfather Mouse heaved a sigh of relief as soon as they'd gone away. Punish us by being gone? Oh, if that is our punishment, then heap it on! In the immediate aftermath of the cat's surprise attack on Deaky, Grandfather Mouse had tried to resuscitate a fervent hope that now, with Bobo and the two remaining cousins gone, the daylight raids would cease, and therefore perhaps the former peace might be restored. But Grandfather knew this was too much to hope for. No one could expect the humans to ignore the high number of instances that suggested the church was infested. Oh, yes. Grandfather Mouse was sure. How could there be anything less than total war waged against them now? Of course, there had been skirmishes before. Battles between humans and mice had flared. But these were always half-hearted measures, and the mice had learned to adapt and avoid snapping traps baited with cheese or daubs of peanut butter. But the cat represented a much more serious attempt. Now they had to contend with a cunning and stealthy adversary, which meant an ever-shifting problem. For what do you do when a challenge like that comes along? You have to adapt. And how do you adapt to a protean cat? The cat is mobile. The cat is quick, the cat is unpredictable, that's its shtick. So how do you adapt to one of those? The answer is, you don't. But if you can't accommodate a problem, what else can you do? The answer always is, if you can't adapt to the problem, force the problem to adapt to you. For that to happen, you had to have a plan, and as Grandfather Mouse knew, it must be clever, and it mustn't go askew. It was going to have to be daring as well, for as the ancient saying goes, it must be a wily mouse that shall breed in a cat's ear.
In a cat's ear? What does that mean?
Well, it means it would take an awfully clever mouse to live in a cat's ear and be able to get away with it without the cat realizing it. Right, and light as a dandelion seed. But it would still have to be wily,
or
too.
Or stupid. Why would any mouse want to live in a cat's ear?
Wait, so you think the saying ought to be, it must be a stupid mouse that shall breed in a cat's ear.
Stupid and probably dead mouse.
Well, Andy, I think you're missing the point of the expression. Well, all right. How about we compromise and say, it shall be a foolhardy but wily mouse.
Okay.
You agree?
Yes, I agree.
Okay, good. Anyway, Grandfather Mouse strongly believed it was going to take a wily plan, which by morning he finally had, tentatively. It had both good things and bad. The good thing was, it just might work. But the bad thing? It involved placing Andy directly in harm's way. All that was left was this makeshift plan, which they were going to have to execute this very day. How would his parents react? What would his mother say? What other option was there? Late in the afternoon, after Andy awoke and was fed a snack, Grandfather Mouse instructed him to follow him. Taking pains to avoid the cat, they carefully wended their way through the inner passage, past the spare mangers, across the vaulted chamber to the short chinked passageway that led to the balcony overlook, that overlooked the great out-of-doors. Andy asked what they had come here for, and Grandfather Mouse replied,
"I'll tell you, but first, gotta give me a chance to catch my breath. I'm not the fastest mouse. I used to be. It's been a long time since I've run like that."
Then he looked up at the darkening sky. It was approaching twilight of a very fine day.
"How beautiful is this light," he said. "I have a very big favor to ask of you, Andy."
"What is it?"
"A very big task. I wish I didn't have to ask it."
"Anything, Grandfather."
"Good. Then first I want you to climb down this wall of stones to the ground."
"All the way down?"
"Yes."
"But I've never been allowed..."
"Well, you are now. Now listen to me. When you get there, I want you to look around quickly and find me a stiff stem of grass, one with the seed head still attached, say one 3 times tall as you. Then here's what I want you to do. Nibble it off at its base and bring it back up here to me."
"My grandfather, be right back."
Wait, not so fast. Here is the best spot to begin your descent. From here, you can hop rock to rock, but be careful when you do. Don't get going too fast down a chute. Make sure there's a rock at the end to catch you, or you'll run straight off into space."
"But, Grandfather, how will I get back up?"
"Climbing back up? Well, that's simple. The tricky part is going down. Now, remember, you don't have your cloak to cover you. You're awfully exposed, so make it quick. Check back up here frequently to see if I'm waving or pointing, and that's when you come running."
Fighting down his trepidation, Grandfather Mouse said, "All right, Andy, get going now. Take your time, but hurry. You have to be back before the train is due." And Andy commenced coursing his way down the church's lumpy outer skin, which was definitely tricky, but not nearly as tricky as descending the netting of the wedding gown had been. On his way, he wondered about his grandfather's plan. What was this need for a stem of grass? And what was this train he was talking about? And what had he meant when he said, "If you can't adapt to the problem, force the problem to adapt to you"? It was all a total mystery. Completing his virgin descent, Andy, for the first time, set pink paw to Mother Soil. It was perhaps only one small step for Mouse, but for him it felt like one gigantic leap. The earth, so delicious beneath his feet. He felt elated. He wanted to run. Excitedly, he turned around to wave up at his grandfather when suddenly, for the first time in his life, he looked up and he took in the enormity of what was towering over his head. The rest of the tower. He just never knew it. All this time, the balcony overhang had hidden this sight from view. No one ever told him before how far up this thing rose. To see to its top, he kept backing up and tilting up his nose, so thunderstruck at looking up that he toppled over backwards. Above him, the awakening planets, like Chinese lanterns, were sprinkled across the sky. How far into eternity the tower seemed to rise. It just kept going up. It's as if its intent was to penetrate the purple dome of heaven, now sliding over like a covered dish. And the main revelation was this, that there was so much more to go. This was what rocked him so, that he barely noticed his grandfather waving up above and motioning him to get up and get busy. Andy sprang to his task, wishing he had time to poke around, but instead he dutifully headed for some taller grass he spied at the corner of a split-rail fence where the mower's blade couldn't reach. Selecting a sturdy stem of just the right length, he bent it forward and backward to test its tensile strength. Then he looked up to the balcony, seeking his grandfather's approval prior to removal. Grandfather nodded back. So Andy, like a lumberjack, but more like a beaver, quickly gnawed the stem clean through at its base, then ran with it back to the church, dragging its seed head along the ground. Reaching the boulder wall, Andy leaped to the first lumpy cheek he came to, and, true to his grandfather's portending, discovered it was no trick at all ascending, so long as he kept climbing and didn't look down. When he reached the lower lip of the balcony, Grandfather helped pull the tuckered little mouse aboard, then accepted the stem from Andy as a trophy well earned. He then carefully laid upon the stone and sat upon it like a paperweight to frustrate any truant gust of wind that might seek to come along and blow it off the ledge, which would force Andy to retrieve it again. "Well done, grandson," Grandfather said. However, there was no wind blowing at the moment. I repeat, no wind. What time we got? How's your bus?
There's time. We've got time.
Okay. Yes, it was certainly a very still and quiet twilight, but not to say that some things couldn't be heard. A ways off, the faint flop of surf breaking on shore, the sound of automobiles and honking horns, motors running, reaching home, people getting out of their cars, ka-chung, ka-chung. Sound of garage doors, brrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrr incisors, Grandfather severed the seed head from the grass stem and brushed it off the ledge where they watched it tumble down. "I forgot to tell you to do this while you were still on the ground," he said. "It would have made climbing up easier."
"I liked it, Grandfather. It was loads of fun, and I'd like to do it again."
"You shall. But unfortunately for us, that was only phase one. We still have to get through phase two." Andy replied anxiously.
"Yes, Grandfather, what is it you want me to do?"
"Sit down for a moment and I'll tell you. That train I mentioned is just about due." And so is your bus.
"Oh, rats, there's my bus.
Wins. Here comes.
Grandpa, what's Grandfather Mouse wanting to do?"
"Well, you'll find out next week." "And I love you, too. Say hi to your mom."
"Okay, I will. Say hi to Grandma. Give her my drive."
"I will."